Struggling, forces it in. Ochai gets the pass and the hoop. He laid it up and in. KU goes up one. 10 seconds to play. They'll try to make it tough on the entry pass. They get it into Shannon. Shannon at the top looking to drive. Pulls up from 17. Missed it short. Might have been blocked. Rebound Jalen Wilson. KU has the ball and the win. You can rock. Chalk it up. The Jayhawks win.
KU with an exciting win. Their 30th consecutive conference opening win. And you may say to yourself, as I was thinking yesterday when I was interviewing the voice of the Jayhawks, Brian Haney, on the Sports Ticket, which if you missed that interview, it's posted on our podcast page on our website, kdcountry94.com. Okay, that's great. You won 29 in a row, but how many of those have been Allen Fieldhouse? He looked it up, only 12. So it's not what you might think.
Yeah.
18 road games, 12 home games, and that 30-game stretch of opening the conference season. Now, how many against ranked teams, we don't know, but that was certainly a big test last night. KU wins. They were down 7 in the second half after being up by 8. And then Bill Self, the genius that he is, dude, this is why he gets paid the big bucks. He went to zone. He went to a zone defense, and it worked. Absolutely worked. And KU wins. And Abaji was terrific last night. He was red hot, and thankfully he was, because nobody else could really hit anything for KU. But the biggest play of the game was the – honestly, it was the play before. Everybody's talking about the play where Abaji scored the game-winning bucket, but if you watch the game, it was Christian Brown's tremendous effort to fight for an offensive rebound that went off of Max McClung's head and out of bounds when McCormick missed a shot with 14 seconds left. That hustle and that second effort allowed Kansas to have the possession to throw the ball in down one, and then Abaji was wide open and a big defensive breakdown by the guy guarding the inbound pass. You do not leave it. You got to think of yourself as a hockey goalie. Like Fran Franchella said on Twitter yesterday, that was a big mistake. You don't leave as a guy that is guarding the inbounder underneath the opposing team's bucket. You don't leave the goal wide open. No. And that was really, and then he was jumping on top of that, and it made it a really easy pass for Garrett to Abaji for the easy layup. So Abaji finished with nearly a career high. He had 23. His career high is 24. He was 8 of 11 from the floor, 4 of 7 from three. So that gave KU the lead at 58-57 with 13 seconds to go. And then Texas Tech had one last shot with 5.9. And then Jalen Wilson, who didn't have a great game offensively, just 7 points, attempted just 4 field goals, leading scorer for KU. But he saved his best. His first block in 5 games came at a perfect time. He blocked the shot by Shannon to close out the win. And Terrence Shannon was terrific for Texas Tech, as was Max McClung. And after that, Texas Tech had nothing offensively for KU, really nothing after Abaji last night offensively. I joked with my son. I said, first team to 60 wins this game, when I was watching the first half, and neither team got to 60.
Yep.
So KU wins. It was a dogfight, kind of expected it. And the Jayhawks win. Marcus Garrett, 10 points, 10 rebounds. But Christian Brown didn't have a great night offensively, but he had 10 rebounds and that huge effort play to give KU that second chance to where they had the inbounds play and they were able to get the winning bucket by Abaji, which was fitting, according to Bill Self, with Abaji getting the game winner based on what he did last night.
Somehow or another, we miss him on the easy pass, and then Marcus finds him perfectly on a hard pass, and Ochai is able to squeeze it in. I mean, unbelievable play. And it was fitting. If we were going to win the game, it was fitting that Ochai made the play to win the game, because that was probably as an efficient a game maybe that anybody has played for us in a long time, against a team that really guarded and their emphasis was to guard him. So really happy for Oach.
KU's going to have to play small. They did at times last night. They got killed on the boards when they went small there for a while, and then they had to put McCormick back in, mainly for rebounding. McCormick didn't have a great game offensively, but he is a factor inside. It opened some things up offensively to KU, because McCormick does post very hard inside. Marcus Garrett, 10 rebounds from the point guard position. Christian Brown, a two-guard with 10 rebounds. Those guys have to rebound. If McCormick's going to be off the court for a while at times with that five-guard lineup. And Kansas gets the win last night in a low-scoring affair, 58-57. They're 7-1 overall, winners of 7 in a row, 1-0 in the Big 12, 1-0 in the Big 8 and Big 12 for the 30th year in a row. That's a big reason why they win conference titles. They don't bury themselves early. Texas Tech now 6-2 overall, 0-1 in conference play. It was number 5, KU, versus number 14, Texas Tech. KU will now play West Virginia Tuesday. They'll come to Allen Fieldhouse. Mountaineers are ranked 8th in the country. KU ranked 5th, so another test for KU on Tuesday, and that's the last game for KU until 2021. K-State will host Baylor coming up tomorrow. More on that coming up in just a moment. But first, we turn to local sports, where there were a few basketball games last night in the North Central Activity Association, and there was also high school wrestling last night.
Yeah, high school wrestling. The Beloit double duel last night there in Beloit, where Smith Center, Republic County, and Beloit all split their matches. Smith Center beat Beloit 40-36. Republic County over Smith Center 33-27. And then Beloit beat Republic County 48-33. So everybody went 1-1 last night there in Beloit at the double duel in wrestling. As Wade said, there was some high school basketball last night as well. In the NCAA, and teams that the Beloit Trojans are going to be seeing tonight. On the girls' side, Ellsworth picked up their first win of the season. They beat Lions 43-11. And then in the boys' contest, or Southeast Sling girls, first of all, lost to Hillsborough 52-42. And the Southeast boys, who Beloit will see tonight, they lost in overtime 71-68 to Hillsborough. So let's look at what's happened with high school hoops there. For last night in the NCAA. And all these scores can be found at NCKSSports.com.
Yeah, that was what the girls lost. I didn't think there was any way that probably was right.
I was going to say,
43-11 they lost. So we'll get that updated on the website. Where did you get that information from?
Elsewhere Twitter said Lady Bearcats win 43-11 over
Lions. Whoever's in charge of Twitter needs to be fired. I didn't think Ellsworth.
Well, I kind of thought it was weird when I saw
11 freshmen and three sophomores.
Yeah, but I was like, Lions hasn't really probably... They've had some down years in some sports, so I didn't know.
Yeah.
But, yeah, that's where I saw it was Ellsworth Twitter.
Yeah, I just double-checked with their athletic director. He said, correction, we lost. So I'll update that right now.
Okay.
Yeah, I was like, I don't see how
Ellsworth
can hold Lions to
11
points.
Last night, yeah.
Yeah. And it doesn't hurt to follow up and ask a question or follow up and double-check that stuff, too. If it's something that seems a little unbelievable, we can follow up and double-check on that, too. Or do you check the person that's Twitter? Maybe they, typed in lose and it auto-corrected the win. I don't know, but I couldn't believe that Ellsworth would have won that game 43-11, and they didn't. They lost 43-11. That sounded a little bit more right. There were 15 girls on the roster. Ellsworth, 11 are freshmen, three sophomores, and they have a junior. They have no seniors on the roster, and that makes more sense. So Ellsworth girls are 0-5. Which they'll be playing Beloit tonight. More on that in a moment. All right, we'll let you go through the rest of the schedule for tonight.
Yeah, the schedule for tonight, as Wade said, we have Ellsworth Beloit girls, which will come up pregame coverage beginning at 5:50, tip off 6 for the girls, and then the Beloit Southeast Saline boys. That's on Katy Country 94 online video stream at nckssports.com. And then on Z96.3, we have St. John's Tipton hosting Southern Cloud, pregame coverage beginning at 5:50 here this evening for the girls' contest. Boys to follow there. Other games going on in the area this evening, Tescott at Osborne. Sylvan Lucas at Pike Valley and Wilson at Lincoln in the Northern Plains League. And Smith Center is at Oakley in the Mid-Continent League this evening. Abilene at Concordia in the NCKL. And those are the games that are in the immediate area there. Again, Lakeside was supposed to play a girls game at Chase tonight. That game has been canceled or postponed. We'll see if they can make those up with Chase. The boys game had already been postponed earlier this week. And then the girls game just last night, it came down that that's postponed. So Lakeside will have no games here in the first semester in basketball. So on boys or girls, nobody's going to be able to get out there for Lakeside until 2021. So hopefully everything calms down for them once we get through the break and they can get on the court in 2021 here for the Lakeside basketball teams.
All right, high school basketball tonight on Katy Country 94 and katycountry94.com. Live video stream of all of the basketball games tonight, the JV games, the CT game for the boys, all of those, plus the varsity, will be streamed at nckssports.com via the live video stream via the Beloit Trojan channel. Then we'll have the varsity games on the radio, Beloit Ellsworth girls and the Beloit Southeast Saline boys. All these games over in Beloit tonight. We start with the boys where, it hopefully will be the first game of the year for Beloit. Southeast Saline boys will have played five games. They lost last night to Hillsborough in overtime, 71-68. Southeast Saline, very talented. Only just one junior on their team, believe it or not. They have five seniors and 11 sophomores, a very talented sophomore class, 11 freshmen, and Southeast 1-4. But they played some really, really good competition, so they might be the best 1-4 team in the state. Ryan Eilert, head coach of the Beloit Trojan Boys, with no starters back from last year's team, went to the state semifinals before the season was ended due to COVID-19 there at State and Hutch. He has Caleb Burks, Owen Eilert back, who had significant minutes last year off the bench, and then there's a few others that played just a little bit last year at the varsity level. They'll be playing possibly some freshmen tonight as well at the varsity level against a very experienced Southeast Saline team, although maybe a little tired after losing overtime last night at Hillsborough. And Coach Eilert just getting ready and about time they're going to play a game.
It's not like we've been practicing as a whole group for a long time, but some of the kids have been at it a long time and are ready to play a game. But it's frustrating to not get the games in But we are around each other every day and practicing, and you know, that would be grateful for being able to do that.
And that'll be the boys game, Beloit Southeast Saline tonight around 7:30. The girls game will be Beloit versus Ellsworth. Same situation. Ellsworth's played five games. They played last night, and as we know now, they lost the Lions 43-11. Ellsworth girls, a team that very young, as we mentioned, they are 0-5, but they played five games. Sean Arimus, head coach of Beloit, realizes Ellsworth's very green, but they've also played five more games than Beloit has.
Yeah, they're extremely young. You know, they're playing quite a few freshmen and sophomores. Have no upperclassmen at all other than one junior. So, you know, they're inexperienced, but actually right now they're a little more experienced than we are because they've got to play four games and we haven't. So we're definitely going to have to be ready.
So Beloit hopefully playing their first game tonight. The girls against Ellsworth. The Ellsworth boys have been quarantined, so thus Beloit was able to work out some of Southeast to come up here because that makes up a game that Beloit was supposed to play against Southeast earlier in the year. Beloit girls and Southeast will have to make up yet their other games. So it's going to be a hodgepodge of a schedule this year. We knew that going in, and that's what we're seeing so far in 2020 and certainly going into the 2021 portion of the season. So once again, Beloit Ellsworth girls pregame about 5:50 tonight, followed by Beloit Southeast Saline boys at around 7:30. Both the varsity games on the radio, Katie Kutch 94 and katiekutch94.com, and then all the JV girls and boys games and the varsity games live video stream at ncksports.com via the Beloit Trojan channel. St. John's Tipton boys and girls have been able to play quite a few games compared to a lot of people in our area. We talked about Lakeside. They're not going to play a game until 2021 at the earliest. And St. John's Tipton certainly has some games under the belt. Now they're going to take on Southern Cloud tonight on Z96.3 The Lake.
Yeah, St. John's Tipton will be favored in both of these games here. And this will be the fifth games for St. John's Tipton, the fourth for the Southern Cloud teams. So they've been able to get out their girls game looking, obviously, St. John's Tipton a favorite there. So the Southern Cloud boys are really down there. So the St. John's Tipton boys, if they can play well tonight, should be in pretty good shape here as they get another league game in here this evening. So, St. John's Tipton in good shape tonight if they come out and play the right way. We are Leah Bergman here momentarily. We'll tell you about the Southern Cloud girls and what her team would need to do in that contest.
Yeah, I remember last year it being a close game. I really, again, want to continue to focus on our passing. I want to continue to focus on putting pressure on their offense. And playing pressure, disruptive defense. So that's really something that we're going to continue to focus on in practice, and that's what I want to see.
Lauren Dubert leading the team with 22 points a game, and St. John's Tipton girls pregame coverage at 5:50 tonight on Z96 Through the Lake. They'll start at 6 o'clock. The boys' game follows again. St. John's Tipton is 2-2 and Southern Cloud 0-3, and Lance Bergman knows that Southern Cloud a little bit down here this season.
Southern Cloud is a team that's, you know, just don't quite have as much talent as they used to. They're going to come out and you know, play aggressive, play hard. And we just got to match the intensity right away and, you know, take care of the basketball and do the things that we need to and not look past them and those kind of things.
So Southern Cloud, St. John's Tipton tonight on Z96.3 and katiekutch94.com. Looking forward to the matchup in the Northern Plains League there at St. John's Catholic High School.
All right, all the information available to you at ncksports.com. Big 12 basketball here this weekend. K-State 3-4, host number 2 Baylor. Baylor hasn't played a game since December the 2nd, just unpaused activities here yesterday. And Bruce Weber, head coach of the K-State Wildcats, impressed with Scott Drew and how he's adjusted as a head coach with the Bears.
He's been there a long time. He started over with the program. You know, played zone a lot, and you know, he realized he won a lot of games with that, but never, you know, he couldn't win championships. And to his credit, he's been flexible. He play man-to-man. They're as tough as anybody. They got great guard play. He's done a great job of finding a niche with transfers, and they're good.
Yes, Baylor is very good. Baylor ranks second in the country. So K-State will work hard on the play hard chart and see if they can get a win. Coming up tomorrow at 3 o'clock in Baylor, K-State is atop the Big 12 standings at 1-0, along with KU and TCU. Big 12 hoop schedule this weekend. Tonight, Iowa State at number 8, West Virginia on ESPNU at 8 o'clock. We mentioned Baylor, K-State tomorrow at 3 o'clock. You can watch that on ESPN+. And if you don't want to pay the money, then quit complaining. Don't pay the money. Houston Baptist is at Oklahoma tomorrow at 4 o'clock on Sunday. Jackson State at Iowa State at noon on ESPN Plus. Oklahoma State at number 11, Texas. That'll be an interesting game at 1 o'clock on the Longhorn Network, if you even possibly can get that network, which I know I can't. That's coming up on Sunday. Wichita State in action. They're 2-2 overall, 1-0 in conference play. They'll host Emporia State. That's a new game that they scheduled, I think, because they've had some postponements. That'll be at 6 o'clock. For Wichita State tonight against Emporia State. Big 12 football honors have been released, and Kansan, who is not a part of the Jayhawks or the Wildcats, is the Big 12 Offensive Player of the Year. Brees Hall from Wichita, who plays for Iowa State, so way to go, KU and K-State. I'm missing out on that kid. Brees Hall is the Offensive Player of the Year, and he's just a sophomore. Deuce Vaughn, the Offensive Freshman of the Year for K-State, no surprise there. And also, let's see here, Big 12 first team, Phillip Brooks, kick returner, punt returner for K-State, a sophomore, made first team all Big 12 on the offensive special teams side. And Wyatt Hubert, first team defensive lineman. That's it. Two K-Staters making first team. And then second team, you got Deuce Vaughn and Briley Moore for K-State, making second team, along with offensive lineman Noah Johnson for K-State. And that's it. Slim Pickens. KU had some honorable mention folks, and Kenny Logan, Kieran Prunty, a freshman, and Kwame Laster, and Kyron Johnson. And K-State also Big 12 honorable mention, Blake Lynch, Jerron McPherson, Brock Monty, and Elijah Sullivan, and Drew Wiley, which you thought he might be at least second team defensive line, but he didn't get that. He got honorable mention. So that's the rundown. Check out it more, big12sports.com. Okay, so we move into football here this weekend, and we've got a lot going on. It's the Pac-12 championship game tonight between undefeated number 13 USC against Oregon at 7 o'clock on Fox. I like USC to win that one. And then tomorrow it's Iowa State against Oklahoma, 11 a.m. Tomorrow morning, Arlington, Texas on ABC. Oklahoma, a six-point favorite. Iowa State beat OU early in the year in Ames, 37-30. Oklahoma's won six in a row since then. Who you got? Iowa State, Oklahoma. Who wins this game?
There's a lot of chirping coming out of the Oklahoma fans that I see on social media about this game. Like, oh, it was a
We're not going to lose twice.
I think Iowa State's going to get them again.
Do you really?
I do.
Okay, I'll take Oklahoma. I'll play the odds. Teams don't beat Oklahoma twice in a season.
They don't.
I'll play the odds on that one. And I think Oklahoma's been there, done that, and Iowa State might be a little bit nervous.
That's the only thing that concerns me about that, for sure.
Yeah, and then Spencer Rattler, you know, hasn't been in that position. Neither is Brock Purdy. So, yeah, it'll be an interesting game tomorrow. I think it'll probably be high scoring, and it'll be fun. Big Ten championship game tomorrow is number 14 Northwestern 6-1 against number 4 Ohio State 5-0, 11 a.m. tomorrow morning on Fox. Ohio State is a 20-point favorite, and I think they'll cover. I don't know how Northwestern. I think Ohio State's got a lot to prove here. One, people think we shouldn't be in because we haven't played enough games. We're going to go out. We're not just going to win. We're going to punk Northwestern. I don't think Northwestern has the firepower to stay with Ohio State at all. I really would love to see Northwestern beat Ohio State. And if it came down to an academic, you know, trivia contest between the two schools, I'm taking Northwestern. But it's on the football field. I think Ohio State wins, and I think they cruise. And maybe it's game for a half, but eventually they're going to illustrate their strengths that they have, and I just think they're going to roll.
Yeah, I completely agree with that.
All right, number 2 Notre Dame 10-0 against number 3 Clemson 9-1. Clemson only lost to Notre Dame when Trevor Lawrence did not play due to COVID. That's at 3 o'clock tomorrow on ABC. Clemson a 10-point favorite. Clemson almost won with a backup quarterback the first time, and Clemson missing a couple defensive starters in that one as well. I'll take Clemson in the rematch against Notre Dame.
Definitely.
All right. Alabama is undefeated at 10-0, number 1 against Florida, number 7. Florida 8-2, coming off the loss to LSU, thanks to the thrown shoe. That rhymes. I'm a poet. Didn't know it. 7 o'clock on CBS tomorrow night. Bama's a 17-point favorite. I expect Bama to roll.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be a high-scoring game. Florida's going to score points.
Yeah.
Florida's going to score points. I don't know how Florida – if Florida gave up that many to LSU – LSU's not a good offensive team.
Yeah.
I think this is going to be one of those 52 to, you know, the SEC plays great defense. I think it's going to be something like 52 to 31,
yeah,
something like that, and about 1,000 yards of offense.
Yeah.
You agree with that?
I do.
All right. Number 23, Tulsa, 6-1 against number 9, Cincinnati. They're 8-0, 7 o'clock ABC, the American Athletic Conference title game. Cincy is a 14-point favorite. It's an interesting game because Cincinnati hasn't played in 3 weeks. they have a lot to prove, although I don't think it matters what they do. They're not going to get in the playoff, unfortunately. No. In fact, I could see Oklahoma jumping them in the standings as well if Oklahoma has a win or an impressive win over Iowa State. It is unfortunate because it does seem like there's a set of different rules for people. Ohio State doesn't play enough games, but they're still in the playoff. Cincinnati plays three more games, and then they don't play, and they fall, and Ohio State doesn't fall in the standings. I get it. I understand the angst about it. I'll take Cincy in this game in a close one. I don't think they cover.
Yeah, I'll say they do cover just for fun, just to change it up.
There is a regular season game that does maybe have an impact on the college football playoff tomorrow at 11 a.m. on ESPN. Texas A&M, a 14-point favorite at Tennessee. If A&M wins, they'd be 8-1, and if there's an upset ahead of them, if Ohio State would get upset, or if Clemson loses a second time, you could, you know, that's going to be interesting. If Clemson loses a close game to Notre Dame, and the first loss was without Lawrence, and a neutral field, they barely lose to Notre Dame. Let's say it comes down to the final minute. Do you think Clemson would still be ahead of A&M for the playoff, despite a loss in both to Notre Dame? Would A&M get in without playing their conference title game and not winning their division?
I just don't know. It's so tough to figure out what they're going to do on that this year.
I mean, A&M's only loss is to Alabama, in fairness to them.
I would, even though I would push for Clemson a little bit, maybe I would think that A&M probably deserved this spot if their only loss was to Alabama, even though they didn't play in their conference title game. But, I mean, that kind of – a lot of that falls on where – what division you're in what division you're in each conference. So, I don't know.
Well, but if Notre Dame loses, here's another one. If Notre Dame loses, they'd be 10-1. They would, and let's say it's a close game. I think if Notre Dame gets beat handily, I think A&M could jump Notre Dame. But if Notre Dame plays a tight game against Clemson, when Trevor Lawrence plays the whole game, Clemson wins, they split the two meetings. Does Notre Dame stay ahead of Clemson?
I think they do. I think Notre Dame does if they lose, because they already have the one win over Clemson, and it would be their first loss. But two losses for Clemson, it might be kind of tough to.
So what we're saying is that nothing's going to change here. Based on our predictions, Alabama's going to be in.
Yeah, based on what we
we're
picked,
basing Clemson's going to beat Notre Dame. Clemson punches their ticket. Notre Dame stays in, and Ohio State's going to win. So how would you say the seeding will be then? Alabama won. Ohio State with only six games would be the two seed?
No, I think Clemson would stay ahead of Ohio State in the
Clemson
would go to two.
So Clemson go to two and Ohio State three, and then Notre Dame four, and Notre Dame, Alabama in the semifinals, and Clemson, Ohio State in the other semifinals?
Probably.
Yeah, that's kind of how I see it. I just don't think anybody on the outside is going to get in. But what happens, though, if Iowa State rolls Oklahoma? But do they jump a one-loss A&M team that doesn't win a conference title or plays for a conference title?
Obviously.
Do they jump a two-loss Clemson team?
Yeah. I don't think they do. Clemson, but they might jump A&M.
What about Oklahoma?
Right, so
what about Oklahoma? I know this sounds crazy. Oklahoma's ranked 10th, but if Oklahoma goes out and just paced Iowa State, what about Oklahoma? Would Oklahoma be able to jump Clemson if Clemson lost?
That'd be tough.
Yeah. They'd be the Big 12 conference champion. The tiebreakers, they'd have two losses just like Clemson. Clemson's both would be number two Notre Dame. OU's would be to an unranked K-State team who finished year 4-6, and they lost Iowa State, but would avenge that. And I think OU has got to win big in order to get a chance at that. I don't think the Big 12 is going to get in the playoff, but there is a chance. There is a tunnel of light, and there is a way that they could get in. More so Iowa State, probably, but Oklahoma is a brand name.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't see it changing the top four teams. That maybe the order that they're in.
I'm going to tell you where the argument's going to come. Here's your argument. I think everybody thinks Alabama's going to win. I think everybody thinks Ohio State's going to win. So those two are in. And I think most people think Clemson's going to win. But if Notre Dame wins or loses, you say they're in.
Yeah.
So let's say Notre Dame beats Clemson. Notre Dame, Alabama, Ohio State, all undefeated, they're in. That's assuming they win tomorrow. Now your argument's going to be Clemson with two losses, both to Notre Dame, conference runner-up, comparing them against a one-loss A&M team whose only loss was to Alabama, and they lost big to Alabama, just like everybody has for the most part this year. And your other argument will be the Big 12 champion, regardless, OU or Iowa State. That'll be the discussion. Clemson versus Texas A&M, Iowa State, and Oklahoma. Because Florida will be out. Georgia with two losses out already.
Yeah.
So it's going to come in Cincinnati. I guess you could argue Cincinnati at 9-0.
They won't.
They won't. No. But you should.
100% they should be in the discussion.
Right.
But they will not be.
No. So, okay, so if that was a situation, you are the committee chair. You have the tie-breaking vote, Dusty Dynas. You have all the power here. You got Alabama in, Notre Dame beats Clemson, and Ohio State wins. So Ohio State's 3, Notre Dame's 2, Alabama's 1. Who's your fourth team? Regardless of who wins, OU, Iowa State, the winner of the Big 12, A&M, a one-loss team, assuming they win at Tennessee tomorrow morning, or Clemson with 2 losses, but not conference champion. Who's your fourth team?
As body of work, so I'm going to knock out both Big 12 teams in this scenario.
I think the loss to Louisiana is going to come back and cost Iowa State, which is unfortunate because they were willing to play that type of game. And they changed to get a game, and they didn't. They were better off not played it.
Yeah.
First game of the year with all kinds of COVID. I think, I don't know how much stock you put in it, but you don't want to make excuses for everybody. Clemson can say, well, you know, we didn't have Trevor Lawrence, you know, in the first game, so that shouldn't be held against us, so forth and so on. OU's had all kinds of COVID issues as well. So, OU's losses, I mean, Iowa State, they avenge one. That might cancel that out. But the K-State loss right now looks really bad.
That's what I'm saying. That's why I
say Clemson's got the best. If you're going to grade them based on quality of losses, which you're not supposed to do, you're supposed to grade it on quality of work. And conference championships are supposed to be a tiebreaker if you think two teams are pretty close to even. Now, if they're not, you can go whatever. I think OU or Iowa State gets in over A&M if it comes down to that argument. But in regards to versus Clemson, I think Clemson still gets in. And you're going to hear Big 12 people just be really, really mad about it.
Yeah.
But Clemson, 2 losses to Notre Dame, and Iowa State, a loss to OU, no shame in that, and Louisiana, who is ranked in the top 20, by the way, and OU, a loss to K-State and a loss to Iowa State. I mean, Clemson's losses look more impressive, if that's the scenario.
Yeah.
I think Clemson's still going to get in. I think Clemson, I think the 4 already set.
I'm leaning that way,
too. The only
too.
Way – Alabama's in with a loss, by the way, too. So, to me, the only way anything happens – this is just my feeling. I think the only way – Ohio State, if they lose, they're out. But if Clemson or Notre Dame lose, I still think they're both in, unless Clemson loses badly. Then that changes things.
Yeah, Clemson can't go out and get beat by 25 points or something like that.
Like, if Clemson goes out and loses by a big score and OU or Iowa State rolls one another in the Big 12, now that makes it even – really more interesting conversation. Yeah. I just don't think
the
there's
any
chance
A&M's going to lose to Tennessee that will make
either.
That part of it easier. But
I don't see it changing. I think that's going to be the 4.
Either.
I think it's going to be the 4. And if Clemson beats Notre Dame, Notre Dame just goes from 2 to 4. Clemson moves up to 2, and Ohio State's at number 3.
I'm fairly confident Notre Dame's in this thing no matter what.
Of course.
Happens to them.
Yeah. Number 12, Coastal Carolina, is supposed to play number 19, Louisiana. You know, here's the other thing Iowa State can argue. Everybody's talking about how bad of a loss we had to Louisiana. They're 9-1, and they're co-champions in the Sun Belt.
Yeah.
And they're co-champions because guess what? They're not playing that game tomorrow. Did you know that?
I did not.
Yeah. Coastal Carolina, Louisiana canceled due to COVID-19. Chancellors have a entire position group that would be unavailable for the game due to possible exposure. So it's a bummer. The Sun Belt finally has that marquee game.
Yeah.
And it would have been ESPN at 2:30 tomorrow. Coastal Carolina was a 3-point favorite. And so Coastal Carolina ends the regular season 11-0. Louisiana 9-1. Of course, Coastal Carolina had some nice wins over BYU. They pummeled Kansas to start the year. Not that that's a great win. Louisiana, of course, with a big win at Iowa State early in the year to start the season. So Sun Belt commissioner said, we're very disappointed that championship game cannot be played, but we're proud of all the players and staff members and their hard work during this truly challenging season. We'll honor both teams as the 2020 Sun Belt Conference co-champions, Louisiana and Coastal Carolina. Complete bummer. It's like the little guys just get, you know, beat up some more. Because that would have been a cool game.
Yeah, it would have been.
Huge for their conference.
I've watched a few of those Coastal Carolina games. They're fun to watch.
Yeah, they are.
Yeah, I'm a little bit bummed out about that. But I guess I'll just watch Clemson and Notre Dame at that time.
I guess. Plenty of football tomorrow, that's for sure. And if you don't want to watch a conference title game for some reason, you can watch Nebraska 2-5 at Rutgers 3-5. Should be scintillating. 6:30 tomorrow night. No, that's tonight, excuse me. So you can watch it tonight. You just have to decide between the Pac-12 title game or Huskers-Rutgers. So, you know, that's a tough decision. Big Ten Network tonight, Huskers 7-point favorite despite being on the road and with a worse record. Interesting. All right, Thursday night football, NFL. The Chargers beat the Raiders. Chargers are 5-9 now. The Raiders 7-7, and their playoff hopes are pretty much done. And Justin Herbert, man, he had a heck of a game. He is going to be difficult to deal with for the years to come. There'll be some interesting Justin Herbert versus Patrick Mahomes battles in future years. As the Chargers win, Raiders scored a field goal in overtime, but the Chargers went down, scored a touchdown to win it.
Herbert going to take it and get it. Touchdown. Chargers win it.
Raiders without Derek Carr had a groin injury in the first half. Marcus Mariota came in. He made a cool $200,000, and actually he made, I think, like $600,000 last night because of incentives in his contract. And he would have won another $125,000 if the Raiders won the game last night. And oddly enough, the game's in Vegas. So, you know, you go to Vegas, you cash in, right? Cash out. Man, Mariota played pretty well, honestly.
Yeah, he did.
He did a nice job. And but Justin Herbert and the Chargers win. Raiders banged up in the secondary. So Gruden, and the Raiders now 7-7, and they look like they're pretty much out of the playoff picture. Chiefs face. You got something to say, or I thought you had.
I was going to say he forgot that they moved to Vegas at the beginning of the game. He had his Oakland Raiders hat on.
Yeah, yeah. Which, in fairness, it's really small.
It is.
Part, you know.
You'll probably toss that one out in the back of the office so you don't pick it up, though.
Maybe so. Okay, the big marquee game in NFL this weekend. The Chiefs at New Orleans take on the Saints. They're only going to have about 750 fans allowed to attend unless they've changed that here in the last few days. The Saints coming off a dismal performance against the Eagles. And losing, and now they're a number two seed, which means they would not get a first-round bye of the NFC. And we don't know. Drew Brees has been pulled off the IR, but they said they're not going to rush him. So we don't know if the Chiefs had to prepare really for three quarterbacks. Taysom Hill, and if he struggles, I think Jameis Winston will come in. And if I'm a Chiefs fan, I'm more worried about Jameis Winston, perhaps. And then Drew Brees. Now, remember, Jameis Winston threw for over 5,000 yards and 30 touchdowns last year. Now, he did throw 30 interceptions, but he had LASIK surgery. So perhaps he will come in tomorrow and just torch the Chiefs defense. I don't know. Or Drew Brees may come in later, or he will start. We don't know what's going to happen on Sunday. I said tomorrow, but it'll be Sunday. 3:25 kickoff and pregame at 2 o'clock, the Chiefs and the Saints. The Chiefs, of course, they win out. They'll be the number one seed in AFC and get that very important first round bye. And the Saints defense, considered by some to be the best defense in the league, but boy, they did not look good against Jalen Hurts and the Eagles last week. Here's Mahomes on how versatile the Saints defense is.
Yeah, I think the way they're able to interchange, I mean, those linebackers, those D linemen, DB, safeties, Malcolm Jenkins, all those guys can really interchange and guard different guys, and as well as blitz and rush the passer. So it's a great challenge kind of trying to figure out what their game plan is for that week, who they want to put on who they want pressuring the quarterback. And you have to do a good job of recognizing that quickly in order to get the ball out of your hands and figure out a way to have success against a really good defense.
All right, so the question, who's going to play quarterback for New Orleans? Taysom Hill has here recently. He's been 3-1 at a starter, but hasn't played a team of this caliber as a starting quarterback in place of the injured Drew Brees. Here's Andy Reid's thoughts on Taysom Hill.
Well, I mean, he's a BYU guy. I think that's probably all we need to say. I mean, he's a good player, strong, a good runner, a good thrower. You know, he represents well, but you know, unfortunately he's on the other team. So we got to get ourselves ready to play against him. And he can do anything and is willing to do anything. So, I knew that when he was coming out. Yeah.
So as a defense, what do you do? Are you worried about who the quarterback is? Cause Hill can run it. Brees doesn't really run it. Brees isn't that mobile, but he moves his feet well. Jameis Winston has some mobility and he's got the best arm of the three. Hill's the best runner. Brees is the most accurate passer. So what do you do if you're Steve Spagnuolo?
Yeah, I mean, no question they're different. I mean, you're talking about a future Hall of Famer and then a guy that's playing really good football that gives us the added threat of running the ball. Look, we need to defend the scheme. They do really well with whoever they put back there. There's a lot of other weapons there besides the guy that gets the ball on the snap. So, listen, we've just tried to defend the scheme this week, and we'll try to make in-game adjustments, and we got a staff of coaches that I think do a great job at that. So that's how we'll approach it.
So we don't know if Drew Brees is going to play on Sunday or not. I think he's not, but Mahomes would be very disappointed if Brees can't give it a go.
It is a little bit. I mean, obviously, I have a ton of respect for Taysom and the way he's been able to play and produce. I mean, I watched him when I was in college and then now in the NFL. I mean, the way he's able to be go out there, throw the ball, be a quarterback, but also be one of the best athletes on the field is truly special. But, yeah, I mean, you want to go up against those great quarterbacks that have done it for a long time and another Texas guy. And – a guy that I've met a couple of times, and it's just a great guy. And so regardless, we're playing against a great football team, and we'll be ready to go.
All right. The Chiefs have the best offense in the National Football League. They have all kinds of weapons, but there's only one football to go around. And Andy Reid says they do fine. They know everybody's going to get their share.
Because these guys love to play, you want to get them the ball. I mean, that's what you want to do. And the best you can, I've always said there's one ball, and try to spread it around the best we can. But we're blessed to have them, and you're going to need all of these guys somewhere. I mean, they're all going to have their time in the spotlight, and it's just how it works. It's a crazy thing on how it goes, but that's how it works. And so just the fact that they keep pushing and they stay selfless that way, I think, is important. And that becomes important in a situation like this as a team.
All right, so the Chiefs are favored by 3.5 points in New Orleans. And we've talked about it many times. The Saints and any team are more than likely are going to have to score 30 or more to beat the Chiefs. You're going to have to get the 30 more than likely. But I will say this. I do have a major concern in this game, and especially now what I've learned in the last 24 hours, is that, first of all, I don't even care who plays quarterback for the Saints. The one loss the Chiefs had this year, what happened? Their offensive line gave up a ton of pressure, and the Raiders were able to get pressure with rushing four. Didn't have to blitz, thus they could drop seven in coverage. And Mahomes and Chiefs still scored 32, but they're down two scores most of the second half. And Mahomes had to run for his life to make plays. The Saints have a very good front four, better than the Raiders.
Mm-hmm.
And right now, the Chiefs are going to be on their third string right tackle, a rookie, Yasser Durant, because Mike Remmers, who's the backup right tackle, who took the place of Mitchell Schwartz. Schwartz is out with a back injury on the IR right now. Remmers has not practiced all week long due to a back and neck injury. So Yasser Durant would be your right tackle, a rookie. That's got to be a concern.
Yeah.
But more of a concern on top of that is, how bad is the back of Eric Fisher? Eric Fisher, your left tackle, Pro Bowl left tackle, has not practiced this week due to a back injury. So what happens if you don't have Eric Fisher, or he can't give it a go, or he does but he's not effective? You got your left tackle, your right tackle. What do you do? And you got an undersized center in Austin Ryder. I'll say that till the cows come home. He does okay, but he's undersized. And your left and your right guard is a second-year guy, a first-year starter, only because of injury in Allegretti. And then you got Wiley, who honestly I think is many times one of the weaker links of the offensive line at right guard. That's got to be a concern, because if the Saints can get pressure, and this applies to any team defensively against any quarterback, and yes, I include Patrick Mahomes. He is human. All right, he threw three picks last week. He is human. If you can get pressure without blitzing, and we talk about the Chiefs need to figure out a way to get that done. Chris Jones, Frank Clark has to step it up. So you don't blitz, because you can get away with blitzing Tua. You can blitz Drew Lock, but can you blitz Ben Roethlisberger in the playoffs? Can you blitz Josh Allen to where he doesn't hit a long one with Stephon Diggs? Can you blitz and not get burned by A.J. Brown and Tennessee Titans and Ryan Tannehill? Yeah. Now, granted, all those quarterbacks aren't like unbelievable quarterbacks, although Big Ben will be a Hall of Fame quarterback. But can you do that in the playoffs? You know, can you all out blitz against Baker Mayfield and Jarvis Landry, things like that? I think you can against the average quarterbacks or the younger, inexperienced quarterbacks. Can you do it against Taysom Hill? Yeah. Can you do it against Jameis Winston? I think you can get burned once. If you do it against Drew Brees, I think you're going to get burned once or twice. So we talk about the importance of the pass rush for the Chiefs, but on the other side of it, for any team to really have a chance to beat the Chiefs, quite honestly, look at the teams that have had success in beating the Chiefs when Mahomes has been quarterback. The number one thing they've done has been able to get pressure typically. Yeah. The Rams, when they beat the Chiefs 54-51 on Monday Night Football, they forced them in three interceptions, a strip sack, and a fumble. They got pressure. Aaron Donald had a huge game, right? I know it was a couple years ago. Yeah. The Patriots tend to get pressure, and they had a really good scheme in combination with pressure against Mahomes, and they caused him some problems early on in his career. You look at the Raiders, they got pressure this year. The Colts last year got pressure with their front four. Now, granted, Mahomes was a sitting duck because he couldn't really move around with an ankle injury. But still, the point is that they were able to get pressure. In the playoffs last year, the Chiefs were in big trouble. They were faced with a 3rd-and-15 down double digits against the 49ers in the Super Bowl. And Joey Bosa probably would have been, or is it Nick Bosa? Joey Bosa?
Nick's the 49ers.
Yeah, Nick. Yeah. Nick Bosa would have been the MVP. because he was having a big game. And the Niners were getting there with four. They're rushing four, and the Chiefs offensive line was just trying to hold up long enough. And they barely did hold up long enough to complete the third and 15 Wasp play to Tyreek Hill that changed the entire game. So when you can get pressure with your front four, whether it's the Chiefs, obviously makes their defense better, or if it's the Saints or anybody playing the Chiefs like the Raiders did this year, and the Raiders don't have a great defensive front, that's how you neutralize this Chiefs offense. And to me, that's it. I don't think ball control, running the ball for 200 yards, works against the Chiefs. I really don't. Unless you're up two scores late in the game, I don't think it works. Yeah. Because we've seen it. The Ravens have done it. Other teams have done it. They can run for a ton of yards, but they still don't beat the Chiefs. But to me, everybody lose track. The only way I always want to focus on Stephen A. Smith, you know, guys that don't really look at games and watch the games that closely, and they just pull up the nuggets off of sheets of paper and they look at stats. But what if you really understand and watch football, that really the way to beat the Kansas City Chiefs is not running the ball, you know, 50 times and having the ball for 35 minutes, because Chiefs are still going to score. So you're just limiting possessions for your own offense as well. The key is really, can you get pressure on Mahomes with your front four without blitzing? Because when you blitz, Mahomes is the best quarterback against the blitz. He will torch you. And why? You got Kelce and Hill man-to-man coverage usually when you blitz. You certainly don't do cover zero blitzes against Mahomes. And we saw the Buccaneers play man-to-man. They got torched for almost 400 yards in one half.
Yeah.
So you've got to get pressure front four. That's the key to beating Mahomes and the Chiefs. Pressure with your front four. Look at the losses Mahomes has had in his career, and that is tends to be a consistent in all those losses. Not all of them, but many of them, is you get pressure without blitzing. The Saints against a third-string rookie right tackle in Yasser Durant, it looks like he's going to start Sunday, and a possible banged-up left tackle in Eric Fisher, now you've got problems on the edges. And if guys keep containment and keep Mahomes in the pocket, because where does he really kill people? When he rolls right, out, especially.
Yeah.
That's going to be a big part of this game. And so I can see the scenario where the Saints will be able to slow down the Chiefs because they can get a pass rush. Now, if the offensive line can hold up, or if Andy Reid just decides, you know what, we're going to dink and dunk it and quick release and get the ball out fast, then it might not matter.
Yeah.
And I'm going to guess Andy Reid's going to do that. I think Sunday Andy Reid is going to be it's going to be a game of 1,000 paper cuts. They might take a deep shot once in a blue moon, but I don't think they're going to take many deep shots against the Saints. I think he understands that I got a rookie right tackle or a banged-up backup tackle in Rimmers if he does try to go. I got a banged-up left tackle with a back injury. I've got the Saints who got a good front four. I'm going to nickel and dime them to death with short passing game. I'll have to use the running game a little bit, keep them honest. And then if they suddenly go, okay, we got to bring pressure, now I hit them deep. So I still think the Chiefs are going to win. I think they're going to find a way to win. I think the Saints can't score enough points with Taysom Hill at quarterback. Now, I think they can if they have Jameis Winston and Drew Brees. I do think they can in that situation. But I still think the Chiefs are going to win. But I think this is going to be really a tight game. And I'm very concerned about the offensive line with all the injuries they have facing a good defensive front of the Saints. And to me, the whole key of this game for the Chiefs, if the offensive line does a great job, I can see the Chiefs rolling in this game. I really can. But I can't say that with any kind of certainty. So I'll say Chiefs. I said last week 28-24. I'll stick with the same score. Over-under is 51.5, so I'll stick on that line.
Yeah.
Chiefs are favored by 3. Chiefs typically don't cover the spread, by the way, but they win. Last 5 wins for the Chiefs have come down to the final possession. They won by 1 possession. I'll say Chiefs, same thing here, 28-24.
Yeah, I agree with a lot of what you said there. Saints are really good at stopping the run, too, so I don't know
We're not even going to try to run it. Half the time, we don't try to run it anywhere.
You know, I don't even know if if Clyde Edwards-Helaire will be a part of this game either, or any running back, Le'Veon Bell. You know, there's so many things the Saints can take away, and especially if your offensive line's not playing real well. So I think we kind of get trapped in that, though, right? We think Saints, we think offense, right? And they got a really good defense. And so
they do, but they got torched by the Eagles last week.
I watched the game.
They gave up 2 100-yard rushers. Of course, part of that is a very mobile quarterback, Jalen Hurts.
Yeah,
but the Eagles don't have much for wide receivers. And the Eagles put up, 500 yards of offense against them, almost 300 in the first half. And the Saints got better in the second half. They made adjustments. The Chiefs' offense is light years ahead of where the Eagles are. Now, having said that, you don't want to put too much stock. It might have just been a flat performance because they're gonna be up for this game.
That concerns me, too. It's like that you think about what happened last week. But the Saints' defense is still good.
It's still good, but it's not great. You have a bad game,
and I think that might have been part of that. And obviously, you know, Jalen Hurts is a different kind of quarterback, too, that can really run the ball. And they for some reason, really didn't prepare for that. It seemed kind of weird that they were not ready for Hurts to run the football.
Yeah.
But But anyway, there are issues there. The offensive line's not intact the way it needs to be for the Chiefs. So, but yeah, again, I agree with what you said. I feel like they'll have enough to get it done and win a tight one in the end, 31-28.
Just remember, if the Chiefs lose this game, it's not the end of the world because they still hold the tiebreaker against Pittsburgh. The key is to lose to an NFC team. So if you beat this, you lose to the Saints, you beat the Falcons, Chargers, Chiefs are 14-2, and they are the number one seed. Beat the Saints, lose to the Falcons, beat the Chargers, you still got the same situation. The only problem would be is if you beat the Saints, Falcons, lose to the Chargers, that'd be two AFC losses. And that's assuming Pittsburgh finishes 14-2, which I don't think they will.
No.
So I think the Chiefs could technically maybe lose two games. Lose two games would be 13-3. And still be number one seed and have the tiebreaker over the Bills because they beat them head to head. And the Bills could end up being the two seed.
Yeah.
So us being the Bills, they're at the Broncos coming up this that Saturday football. We got all kinds of football tomorrow. We got college football. We got NFL football. Bills, Broncos, Saturday night. And actually Saturday afternoon, 3:30 tomorrow. And then tomorrow night, Panthers at the Packers. Packers need a win to stay atop the NFC. If the Packers were to be upset, though, then that gives even more motivation for the Saints to go, wow,
yeah, we can
go
grab that.
Well, they're not out of it, but I'm saying they would control everything if the Packers lose tomorrow night.
Yeah.
Texans at the Colts. Colts tried to not stumble against the Texans. Texans now a roll of spoiler. Jets are at the Rams. The Lions are at the Titans. The Buccaneers at the Falcons. Jaguars at the Ravens. The Patriots are at the Dolphins. The Bears are at the Vikings. The Browns at the Giants. The Seahawks are at the Washington football team. That's an interesting game. Could be the first-round playoff matchup, Seahawks at Washington. If the season ended today, that's what you have. Eagles at the Cardinals. And as we said, the Chiefs at the Saints. Pregame at 2 o'clock on Z96.3 Lake. And then also coming up, it'll be the 49ers and the Cowboys in Dallas. And then Monday, it will be the Steelers and the Bengals. Steelers at the Bengals. Steelers try to break a two-game losing streak. And if you look at the playoff picture right now, in regards to, let me see if I can find it. There we go. I want standings, and then I want to go to the playoff picture, please. That's what I want. Finally got to it. Okay. If the season ended today, here are your playoff matchups. So let's just have fun with this to close out the show, shall we? So the Chiefs would be the one seed. The Steelers would host the Dolphins. Who are you picking? Dolphins at Steelers if the season ended today. I know.
I think I'll go with the Steelers in that
because
that setting.
Of experience of quarterback. That's where I'd go.
Yeah.
I think they'd find a way. Bills would host the Colts.
I'll take the Bills. Yeah.
Browns at the Titans. I'll take the Titans in a rematch after Browns spanked them a few weeks ago.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Okay. So if
this is kind of not going the way we want it to.
Okay, so that would mean then that the Bills would be at the Steelers in the divisional round and the Titans would come to Kansas City in the divisional round.
Yeah.
And the Titans are one of those teams we really are kind of worried about. In the NFC, you have the Packers as the one. The Saints are the two. The Saints would host the Cardinals. I'm going to tell you something. I think the Cardinals would win that game. You just saw what the Saints can do against a mobile quarterback. Kyler Murray's a lot better than Jalen Hurts running around. More experienced. Hopkins and Fitzgerald. They've got a good defense. Hassan Reddick got 5 sacks the other day. I think the Saints is going to have another horrible, disappointing ending of the season, and Breeze won't be really fully in going anyway by that time. I think the Saints would lose to the Cardinals.
That's the issue there. I'll just be different and pick the Saints and say they'd win it.
Okay. remember last year, the Saints lost in that division round at home to the Vikings.
Yeah.
Last 3 years, they've lost in the final play of the game. The Rams would host the Buccaneers. The Rams beat the Bucs earlier in the year.
I like the Rams in that, the way they're playing right now.
I do, too. The Seahawks and the Washington football team. I'll tell you what, that one to me, about 3 weeks ago, you would have said, yeah, whatever.
It's not
now, I think I flip a coin. Of course, they play this weekend. So I still would say Russell Wilson make enough plays, but Alex Smith is healthy. The Washington defense is really good.
Yeah.
Very young. Chase Young in particular.
Yeah.
So you suddenly don't have like a gimme win that you thought you were going to have because NFC East suddenly has been beating teams.
Yeah.
The Washington football team went out and beat the Steelers. The Eagles went and waxed the Saints last week. You got the Giants that went to Seattle and won. I mean, suddenly you got these NFC East teams that couldn't beat anybody, now beating some quality teams.
Yeah, Washington, I want to see what happens this weekend. Of course, that probably won't be the matchup. If Seattle stays.
It could still be, because the Browns got the Giants. Yeah. The Browns beat the Giants, which I could see the Browns losing that game to the Giants after that emotional, tough loss the other night.
Yeah, so, Seattle, a few weeks back, it would have been like, Seattle's got it.
Yeah, early in the year, you would have said that.
Yeah.
So, there you have it. Our look at the playoffs that will obviously change probably after this weekend, and we'll go through this whole exercise again next week. All right, high school basketball on the radio tonight. Go.
Yeah, Katy Country 94 and NCKSports.com online video stream pregame 550 girls game between Ellsworth and Beloit starts at 6. The Southeast Saline Beloit boys follows that. And then on Z96 Point through the lake, KatyCountry94.com. It's Southern Cloud at St. John's Tipton. Pregame 550, tip off at 6 o'clock.
We'll cross our fingers and hope the buses get on their way and make it to their destinations tonight. Have a great weekend, everyone.
State, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast. Subscribe via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or sunflowerstateradio.com.